run away.
I had a great flight in. I was on a plane that was more empty than full, but it was one of ours. It was AA, American Airlines. So I don't know. There's something very comfortable about seeing all your literature all over the place, you know. AA on the wings, AA on all the books, you know. It's like, hey, you know, this is great. You know, I'm not much about thinking. You know, I firmly believe that once an alcoholic starts to think, he puts some portion of the world in jeopardy. And, you know, it's just the way it is. You know, it's kind of like the story of the three alcoholics who were coming up for a review to get out of the mental hospital. And they went in to see the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist said, okay, before you go home, you have to answer a very simple question. And he said, okay, what's the question? So he said to the first one, how much is 3 times 3? And the guy looked at him and said, 118. I think you got to stay just a few more days. You know, you're not quite there yet. And he said to the second one, how much is 3 times 3? And that guy said, Tuesday, defiantly. And he said, nah, I don't think you're quite ready to leave, so. Finally, he says to the third guy, how much is 3 times 3? And the guy says, 9. And he says, thank God. He said, how did you get that? He said, it was easy. I just took Tuesday from 118. You know, that's the kind of mechanism that we're dealing with. That's why all of the literature deals with getting into action. You know, we don't have a chapter in the big book into thinking. You know, that's the last thing you want someone to do. We have a chapter into action. We don't have a chapter thinking about others. We have working with others, you know. And our third legacy is very clear. It says, you know, in addition to being a society based on principles, we're a society of alcoholics who are based on action. We take actions. We do things. And it doesn't make any difference if you understand what you're doing, even if you have a clue of what you're doing. You just do it. And in the process of doing it, you create a habit. You know, you want to create a habit, you repeat an act. And that's what recovery is. It's doing certain things over and over and over again until they just become a part of you. And that means going to meetings, working with others, you know, all the simple things that you hear over and over and over again. And the bottom line is, don't make it too complicated. You know, fortunately, I got sober with guys, and I hang out with guys now where, you know, they're not the brightest bulbs in the room. You know, I always say at our group, you say, how long are you sober? We go. Guys in my group think unfinished furniture is a table with 3 legs. You know, like they just have no idea what's going on. And yet they're able to stay sober. And they're able to stay sober because they're constantly doing stuff. You know, and you realize if you're new to AA, you haven't realized this yet, but you will. But AA is divided into 2 groups: those that do the work, and those that take the credit. Try to get in the first group. There's a lot less competition. You know, like get in a group that's just doing the stuff. You know, and what you'll find out is that you'll be involved in a bunch of stuff that you have absolutely no idea what's going on. We have newcomers come down on the beach, and I'm sure they do it up there. In the L.A. area, but we have newcomers come down on the beach and play volleyball on Saturday. Did you ever see somebody who's just like a month off of speed playing volleyball? I mean, they get hung up in the net. I mean, they have absolutely no idea what's going on. You know, they just, you know. And then you have those that took other stuff and drank, and when you hit them the ball, it hits them in the face. And then when they play on the ground, they go... And, you know, and then they want to be captain of the team, you know. And that's basically the people we work with all the time. And hopefully you guys are planning to come out to the International, because it's going to be in San Diego next year. And I just received a deal the other day where they're expecting in excess of 110,000 people. They're expecting tons and tons of people. So register early and come on out. In fact, if you can, come out in May, hang out for a while. It isn't that expensive. just bring that plastic, you know. But we're looking forward to a big time. And I was at a meeting the other day, and this is the kind of guys I hang out with. They passed around a sheet for people who could speak foreign languages, you know, so you could sign up and volunteer if you speak another language. And the guy sitting next to me, it said French, Italian, you know, you check off. He said, you know, I said, if I had a six pack, I could speak any one of these, you know. He said, you give me 6 to have a beer, I'll talk slow, I'll talk fast, I'll do whatever you need. But, and we'll probably have some of those people on the list, you know. They'll be talking one language, and that's basically AA, and the other people will be talking French, and we'll have some German guy hook up with them. But that's the way it will work, and it will work okay, because In Alcoholics Anonymous, the thing that you notice after a while is it all works out regardless of what you think is going on. You know, it's just an amazing thing. I was talking to a few people. I was supposed to be here last year, and at the last minute I had to cancel. And the reason that I canceled was I had a son who was traveling around the world at the time, singing on a boat, doing the thing he always wanted to do most, and that is entertain. And when he came back, he was a voice in the movie called The Killer Tomatoes. I mean, did big parts for this kid. When I got a call and he came home, he was in full-blown AIDS. And he got home on July 8th, and by September the 7th, he was dead. And I had a chance to recognize something that I've heard countless times in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is living one day at a time, being totally in the moment, and recognizing the fact that you're powerless oftentimes to change things. You're just totally powerless. No one likes to admit to being powerless. I know I don't, and I've never met anyone who likes to. It equates to being I guess you can say the best thing about being powerless is it's kind of like being voted most attractive in your cell block, you know. You're glad the other guys think well of you, but you're not sure you want to pick up the award, you know. And it was during that time that a whole array of things became very clear to me, just how important each day of life is. I always had a semblance of that. This kind of really crystallized it. And my son had what they call neuropathy, which is constant pain. They couldn't relieve the pain. So I used to just crawl into bed and hold him the whole night long. And it was a deal where over the course of 2 months, he lost his eyesight and he lost his hearing and eventually he lost his mind. And it was a constant deterioration. But he was in the moment, each moment, and he was living each moment as it came. And he was very thankful for all that was going on. He was very thankful for the support that his mom and I got to, you know, I know God has a good sense of humor. I got to meet my husband-in-law. I mean, right in the middle of chaos, having your ex-wife and her husband come visit. You know God loves to do bang shots just to show off. It's like, yes, this is good for you. In the background, I heard people that I had kind of teased over the years going. And I got to see my son do a whole array of things that were, to me, very heroic. And one of those things was he was unable to use a bedpan because he had lost so much weight. So he would crawl on the floor to the bathroom in order to maintain his dignity. And I would put pillows down on the floor, and he would crawl across the floor on these pillows because he was so bony, he had lost so much weight, he went from 194 down to about 120. And the thing that became very clear to me was that in the process of doing that, he was crawling on the floor and maintaining his dignity. And I had crawled on the floor and lost my dignity. So crawling on the floor wasn't the deal. It was why you're there. And you find out in life, most times we talk about paradoxical things in AA. The reality is that we don't know why certain things are happening. And it was interesting that Tracy's here this weekend because I told that story in Odessa about a month or so ago. And her mom was the Al-Anon speaker there. And she related that to Al-Anons, seeing their loved ones crawl on the floor and not being able to do anything about it, being powerless to do anything about it. And my son, God love him, he maintained a sense of humor throughout the whole thing. He had lost all this weight, and he had been a very good-looking guy and had a lot of good parts on TV and stuff, and now he was just deteriorating. And one day he called me to come in the bathroom, and he had like four or five hairs sticking up on his head, and he was very drawn, and he said, "Would you please comb my hair and wash my face and then call Gentlemen's Quarterly? I think I'm ready for the photos." And the bottom line was he was there with what was going on to him for most of the time. And it's ironic because, as some people know, I volunteer in the hospice program, and that's where he ended up dying. He ended up dying in the San Diego hospice. It was a time of my life where I didn't have a whole lot to hang on to, it seemed. And sticking with the winners became very important to me. In fact, that's when they stuck with me, because people started appearing out of the ether and just doing things. You know, guys that wouldn't do anything for anybody began like washing clothes and going to the store and doing errands. And And it was the AA family kicking in. And that is my family. You know, my natural family, you don't have any choice with. But with alcoholics, you know, it's that you get a chance to choose here who you want to hang out with. And I got a chance to hang out with a lot of great people. And they, in turn, were very supportive for me, not only during the whole period of his illness, but subsequent to that illness. They were just there all the time. And we just celebrated on the 7th of this year his anniversary, and it was just amazing to me how many people, even after a year, gave you a call or sent you a card or let you know that, you know, that you, that they were aware of the fact that you might be going through something. And that's the way my recovery has been. My sponsor came out this summer. He's a very, very sick man. Very sick man. And as I thought, as he got older, he might mellow, but he's much sicker than I ever presumed. And we went down to the beach, and we were sitting there on a place that's, it's outside, it's kind of like a Venice Beach atmosphere down in Mission Beach, and there's a boardwalk, and gals are skating by on those, you know, single blade skates doing to music with the things in their ears, and they're wearing what is the equivalent of dental floss, and they're just bobbing along, and you hope no one falls and really hurts themselves, and we were just sitting there, the four of us, and to show you how God works out in our neighborhood is that the guy who made the 12-step call on my sponsor now lives in San Diego, and he's 33 years sober. So he was sitting there, my sponsor was sitting there. The guy who was at the very first AA meeting I ever went to, who's now my neighbor, he was there. And I had at that time just celebrated 24 years of sobriety. My sobriety date is July 5th of 70. And I had just celebrated 24 years of sobriety, and I had the least sobriety. And you know, you're sitting there, and my sponsor, he has a mind. I thought at this time, you know, Alzheimer's or senility, something would have helped him. But he remembers everything so clearly. And he's saying things like, you know, he was talking about a person that I knew at one time, but I really don't know today. And it was me. And he says, remember when you first came in, kid? He said, if you could have resold Yankees, there wouldn't have been a boat in the harbor. You know? He said, if you could have fenced that dog, they would have been drifting out to sea. And now he says grace with every meal, which I did not know when I took him to this restaurant. I would have taken him to something enclosed in a corner in the dark. And so we got our food, and of course we're the three barbarians from the coast, so we just started eating. And then when his food came, he grabbed our hands, and he said, dear Lord, it's nice being here with Kenny and the boys. Thank God, Lord, we're all sober and nobody's going to jail. And people who were sitting there catching their breath started skating away very rapidly, you know? And people were actually going, I don't think I'll sit there, I think I'll sit here. And they were kind of like rearranging the seating. And I knew that this prayer took at least a half hour. And I knew that. Ed and Bill told me later it was about 4 minutes, but it just seemed like a half hour because I just wanted to take the bread or something and put it in, you know. He was going on and on and on, and it was, and yeah, and then remember, and I said, oh, God, you know. But he's a winner, so I stick with him. And he is a winner because he was one of the guys who was there. I don't care where you go in sobriety as to, you know, if you get sober here in Muscatine and you move to Davenport or, you know, wherever you move to, there's something very special about the point where you came into AA and where you initially got sober. I don't care where you move. It's not like you can't belong anywhere else. It's just that those were the folks who saw you when you were rawest. And they were the folks who handheld you through the most difficult times. And they know a lot more about you because after a while, you know, you take off and you develop new persona. Yeah, that's me. That's who I am. I never did that stuff, you know. And that's why it's hard for me to go back. I love people saying, well, I remember I was 2 days old and I wrote in my journal, still tired from the trip. You know. I don't remember most of what happened to me. And the things I remember most vividly never did happen to me. They're all probably not there. So it doesn't leave you much of a story, you know? So I talk about what's going on now because it's really the only thing I have that's even tangible. You know, it's here. And I was reading the other day, William James, Variety of Spiritual Experience. And you know, something grabbed me that someone else might have thought of a long time ago, but it hit me for the first time, and that is that what he was talking about, he has a line in there where he says, when I talk about a variety of a spiritual experience, I'm talking about original experiences. I'm not talking about imitation experiences. I'm not talking about things that people do out of habit. I'm not talking about what they do out of being part of a family, and the family does that. I'm talking about original experiences. And you know, if you take that and you overlay that into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's exactly what we're talking about. We're talking about coming here and having our own spiritual experience. An original spiritual experience. Something that's very tangible to us. Psychic change, whatever terminology you want to use, which enables you to start to look at life very differently than you've ever seen it before. And it's something that you don't have to do a lot of words about. You know, sometimes you see people, they're so busy labeling the waves, they miss the ocean. And this is about keeping it real, real simple. That's why the old timers laugh a lot, because they don't know anything. And we're all following them, you know? And the longer they're here, the more they know they don't know. And the masses, that's with an M, they keep multiplying and coming, like, yeah, you know, I'm following him, you know, he's our leader. And he hasn't the faintest idea what's happening. You know, his pretense is as big as your own. You know, he has no idea. And the reason he's laughing is because he knows he doesn't know. And now he's looking back and saying, look at this, you know. Is this a paradox? When I knew, no one came near me. Now I know I don't know, and they're just multiplying like, you know, like rabbits. They just keep coming. And that's what this is about. It's not knowing. And it's learning to slow people down. Everybody should get a phrase that slows people down, particularly newcomers, because sometimes they want to jump in and ask these very, very involved questions, you know, which you wouldn't have a clue of, you know. So you got to keep something, you know, you got to keep them here at arm's length, and yet you don't want to lose face, so you have to let them know that you don't know without really saying that. And at the same time, not jeopardize their position, because, you know, if you tell them anything, they're going to try it. And I remember that John Madden, when he coached the Raiders years ago, he's now out of that racket, but he used to coach the Raiders, and before he sent them out on the field for the second half, he always used to say the same thing, and that is, this half, let's forget the mule and just load the wagon. And they would go, yeah, and the Raiders would go out and kill people. And then his guys retired, they call out and say, Coach, you know, what does that mean? You know, like, I don't have any idea what that means. And John Madden didn't know. You know, he said, I don't know. He said, I heard it somewhere, it sounded good, so, you know, I used it. So now we have the whole coaching staff there with the Raiders, and they still say the same thing, and the guys still get excited, and then as they retire, they go like, what does that mean? You know? And nobody knows. So you have to come up with one that's creative. Mine is very simple. I just tell the guys when they're really pressing me, I tell them very directly, the fish in the sea are not thirsty. So Ken, what you're saying is the fish in the sea are not thirsty. That's exactly what I'm saying. Chances are they never were. But I can't attest to that. That's not my experience. And then a couple of weeks go by, and you know, you just did that offhand. Like, you just like, get out of here, you know. And you'll go into a meeting and you'll see five or six guys who look reasonably intelligent. And some guy in the middle is saying, the fish in the sea are not thirsty. Well, I should have known that. And then you get the real brilliant. Well, I would have said that if I had a chance. But that's the whole deal here. You really don't mature in AA until you can laugh at yourself. And the way we get you ready for that is we laugh at you when you first come in. And you know, sometimes we do it behind your back. And sometimes we do it to your face because you're just too funny to hold it to behind. You know? But the bottom line is that nobody knows anything. Don't let anybody tell you they know. All they have is their own experience, and that experience will change over time because they'll get to see things differently. As you grow spiritually, things will just be different. And it's not like you say, oh, today is different than yesterday. It just is. And you don't have to go around sending off any alarm bells or doing anything different. And it gets to be real, real interesting. And what you'll get to notice is that as you admit more and more you don't know, but you're willing to keep an open mind, then people are just attracted to you. They're just attracted to you. And the reason they're attracted to you is because they know you have what they want. And what they want is the ability to be honest with themselves. Everybody wants to be honest with themselves. It's a terrible thing in life when you only need one person to support you and you can't recruit yourself. And you know, when you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, you listen to the newcomers, they're always talking about what they lost. And you listen to the old timers, they're always talking about what they're trying to get rid of. And you say, isn't that interesting? You know? And then in between, you just grow. And when you get here, you hear people say things like, I lost everything. And I have nothing. And then after they're here, while they realize that the everything they lost is nothing, and the nothing they were left with is everything. Because what you get left with is, you know, the ability to grow spiritually, to see life through new glasses, to be able to grow into this world and say, okay, whatever this world is, I can live in it, and I can live with it at peace, and I can live it at peace with myself, and I can allow everybody else their own space. And you have to realize that, you know, sometimes you hear people say, it sounds good, but they'll say, there's us in here, and then there's the normal people. There are no normal people. There are just folks who haven't shared with you yet. And as soon as they share with you, you go, you can't believe it. Out in our area now, all the trucks have big bumper stickers on them, and it says, bring back Tonya Harding. You know, because people are just getting tired of the old stuff. And you know, when we had the shootings up in the L.A. area, the way our people in L.A. adapted to that is they had bumper stickers. It said, like, cover me, I'm changing lanes. You know? Don't shoot, this is my off-ramp. And the one I really liked, it says, keep hunking, I'm reloading. And it lets you know, anytime you need a good laugh, just turn on the TV. Jill was telling me something that was on there last night. I mean, you just turn on the TV and you watch for a minute. And you say, is this amazing? And these people are running the world, you know? And any day you expect to see the president come out of the White House, at least I do, and then I'll know we're okay. I went to see Clinton come out of the White House and stand on the White House lawn and all these newsmen around him and they're clipping and they're taking pictures and they're shoving microphones at him and hear him say, the fish in the sea are not thirsty. And then I know there's a chance, you know, because you listen to these experts and they don't know anything. They always start out with, people say to me, why don't you watch the news? I said, there's nobody who knows anything. And I don't mean that to put them down, but they say things like, I think, perhaps, maybe, if this were to happen, that might happen. Who knows? Nobody knows anything. And the reality is people keep tuning in and then quoting that stuff. And thank God I hang out with alcoholics who don't know what's going on. And they don't care to know what's going on. They're too busy living life. And they're so into it that the news is very secondary. They are the news. Their life is the news. What they're doing is the news. And I mean, we do the wackiest things. I mean, we have a little deal now. It's not going to last very long because some people are becoming hostile. But like if you call up and you're complaining, we send a biddy patrol over to your house. You know, it's guys with little party hats and stuff. And they have kazookas and all that kind of stuff. And they tell you if you're going to have a pity party, the least you should do is invite your friends, you know? Like, you know. And guys are like, yeah, it's a terrible... No, it wasn't that bad, you know? Hey, Ken, this is a new place. We just moved in. Yeah, you know? But I have clowns by my phone, and I have bells and whistles, and I have an alarm clock that goes, wow, you know? And the deal is that when people call me, I know they need to be connected to laughter. Because if you just leave them alone, they're going to turn whatever it is into something that's very, very threatening. I mean, you know, alcoholics just scratch stuff that don't itch. You know, that's what we do best. And then after a while, it becomes real irritant, you know, like, and then you want to share it with everybody you meet until they see you coming and go away, you know, because it's the same thing. And the reality of the guys I hang out with is that we constantly say to each other, we don't know. And then you hear guys say the darndest thing. The other night, I heard a guy, it almost was better than the fish in the sea are not thirsty. He said to a guy who's, he and his wife are having trouble having a child, he said, you know, since your mom didn't have any children, there's a good chance you won't. And the guy he was talking to, you know, these are not guys that are going to build rockets, you know, these guys are, you know, paper planes maybe, but these guys, you know, they're just in a different place. And fortunately, you know, it's nice to go to meetings and be connected with that. It's nice to have a respite. It's nice to go where there are people who are talking about living sober and living happy, joyous, and free, and getting on with lives. And you know, like somebody said the other day, they were falling off their pink cloud. They said, oh, I just fell off my pink cloud. And somebody said, take the steps, it's a pink parachute, you know? And it's like, wow, you know, it's always something about going on. And the guys, there's a guy with me, he thinks the worst thing ever happened to him. He was growing up, he was about 12 or 13, and he tried out for Little League. And he was such a pain in the, he was a nuisance to a lot of people. And they traded him to another team. You know, like, here's a kid 13 years old, he hasn't even come to bat, and they traded him to another team. Like, yeah, you take him over on that team. And he's now 47. And you know what he remembers?
They traded me when I was 13.
So we have a lot of guys who just won't let up on him now. They come to meetings wearing Padre hats and New York Yankee caps. And they walk by and say, loser! You come across some people like that. And the thing is you got to get them in a slow, loving way to understand that life, you know, sometimes in life we're all going to lose our innocence. We're all going to find out that some ugly things can happen, and we're powerless to do anything about them. But the nice part is that we can get on with life. You know, one of the guys I love to read is Robert Frost, and they asked him to sum up life, and he said, you can sum it up in three words. It goes on. No matter what's happening, it goes on. And either you go on with it, or you dig in your heels and decide, it's not going my way, I'm not going any further. And then from that point on, you start to have all kinds of problems instead of just saying, hey, you know, it's not going the way I would have planned it, but hey, this is the way it is. And it's amazing to me how we take so much for granted, you know, in terms of like when you see people who aren't healthy, how important it is just to be able to get up and tie your own shoelaces and go to the bathroom and not be disturbed and you know, just do everyday stuff. And you just take that for granted. And, you know, I love to make people in our area, people are so tense at times on the highway. And they're not all alcoholics, that's for sure. But you see them in traffic, and they're beeping, and they're weaving in and out, and they're running over people trying to get a car length ahead. So I, like, put down my window and make room for them and wave them over and, you know, put on my windshield wipers and put a Kleenex up my nose and wave to them, you know. And, you know, they start to laugh. And then they realize how stupid they are. And it's easy to get stupid. All you got to do is forget. You can get so busy doing something, you forget. And then someone reminds you. It's like singing in front of the, you know, being in the bathroom and singing in front of the mirror, and then somebody walks in and you're like, oh. And then you're brushing your teeth, you know. Now it's amazing how we do that stuff because we're so uncomfortable with just doing what we want to do. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I got to this program living with my mother, and she was living in a senior citizen place. And I had been there so long, I could use the walker. I mean, and my mom said, you know, they told me one of us has to move, and since I'm the senior citizen, I think you have to go. And I had all those things that you have going on. I was in the process of going to jail, and I used to find things before people officially lost them. And you know, I used to drink to the point that I would end sentences with the word the, you know. And somehow I always knew it was my spot at the bar, you know, like this was my spot. And, you know, I sure hope you don't take it because it's very valuable to me. I mean, I'd end up in the emergency room trying to preserve this spot because somebody would give me a barroom facial, you know. And the thing is that when I was drinking, I related to animals a lot because sometimes I got thrown from places. And, you know, one night I got thrown out of a card game. It's not because I was doing anything bad. I was just drunk. And they threw me from the third landing down to the first landing. And they just tossed me. And I turned in the air and I landed on my feet and somehow I was able to keep my balance. And there was a cat there. And he looked at me as if to say, "Nice landing." And I looked at him and, "Hey, practice. You get like this." And it's an amazing thing that, if coming here and being able to laugh is so very, very important. You know, sometimes I beat that drum to death, and I beat it to death because I don't know what else there would be with laughter. You know, if you're not able to laugh, then life gets real, real, real tight. I mean, I can remember situations with my son, God love him, he was right in the middle of stuff, and he would come out with this stuff. And one night we were fighting his fever and trying to get it down, and it broke to about 102, and he opened his eyes, and there was his mom and his brother and myself, and he said, "Wow," he says, "I'm having a vision of a nuclear family." You know, like, so the bottom line is that he was able to maintain his humor throughout this whole thing, which was not very humorous. And it brought my other son and I so very close together. And, you know, the thing that I remember most vividly is that when my son died, the day he died, the moment he died, his mom left the room. And when I went outside, she took me by the hand and we walked down to the little chapel, the little meditation center there. And we both cried together. And it was as if God were talking directly into my ear. And after about a half hour, I opened my eyes and I looked at her as clear as I could. And I said, "You know, over the years, I did a lot of damage in terms of you. It was never intentional. It was never intentional. And I love you, and I hope when we leave here, whatever there was between us, that was evil or bad or upsetting, we can leave right here." And she said the same thing. And when we left there, she went off with my husband-in-law, and I went off with my son, and we were two healthy people. We were two healthy people. And so something came out of that. And people like to tell you what comes out of events. I like to determine that for myself. I don't like people to tell me the experience I should have had. I like to have the experience, and then if it's worthwhile, I'll share it with you. But the bottom line is that in life, I have always been fortunate enough to be around nice people. There have been nice people throughout my whole life. A lot of times I didn't recognize them as such, but there was always people there who were trying to do the right thing for me. And sometimes you lose your focus, and what you focus on are the people who you think are trying to do you in. And so much of this thing becomes a perception, you know. It's all a perception. And that's why the book talks about it as perception, you know. It talks about the delusion. The delusion has to be smashed that we are like other men. We're driven by 1,000 forms of delusion. You know, selfishness and self-centeredness, but it's all delusional. And if you look up the word delusion, and that's a word that I like to look up, particularly with newcomers, because sometimes they go to meetings and they hear the word denial. There's nothing wrong with the word denial, it's just wimpy. It's not a good alcoholic word. If you look up the word denial, it says, somebody who knows the truth and doesn't want to admit to it is in denial. Amen. You look up the word delusional. Alcoholic. It says psychotic thought. Where the person involved has no idea of reality. You know? That's alcoholism, you know? You know, and then if you get to denial, that's spiritual growth. You know, like, you know, it's like, hey, yeah. Hey, guess what? I just moved over here from delusion, you know? I'm in denial now. Pretty soon I'll be hanging on to rigorous honesty, you know. But that's the deal here, you know. It's all about not knowing and then saying you know. Are you okay? Yeah. And then thinking, who am I? Where am I? What's this all about? You don't know. But you're delusional. You're able to tell yourself, and the book says that real clear in the prelude. It talks in the doctor's opinion, I should say. It talks about we can't separate reality from what's real and what's unreal. We just don't know. We lose track of it. That's why you hear. That's why we make great witnesses in court. We were there, but we weren't there. We did it, but we didn't do it. I said it, but it didn't come out of my mouth. You know, like, you know. How can you harass somebody like that? You know? And then they want us to emulate the people who we write about in that book, you know, the stories. And St. Francis. You want to read about somebody, read about St. Francis. You know, we use his prayer. It sounds like he just hooked up with God and like everything was peachy for St. Francis. I mean, he lived a tough, tough life. And he dedicated himself to three things, so you know he's not alcoholic. He dedicated himself to being hungry, poor, and homeless. It's real hard to get leverage on a guy like that. You know, like, oh, okay, Francis, you do that again, we're going to give you something. We're going to give you a meal. They're going to take you in for the night, you know. How do you threaten a guy who wants to be hungry, hungry, homeless, and in poverty? You just can't. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, the old-timers used to have all these good sayings, you know. I never knew what it meant to be in the world and not of the world. I went to school and they would say things like that and I didn't know. It was kind of like the fish in the sea to me. I couldn't understand it. And then one day a guy pinned me up against the wall and he said something. It was the clearest thing I ever heard in my life. He said, be what you is and not what you ain't. Because if you is what you ain't what you is. And I thought, how clear could you be? You know, like that's the whole thing. Why didn't someone say that to me before? You know, it was right on. It was like, right on, yeah. Like, be what you is and not what you ain't. Because if you is what you ain't what you is. The fish in the sea, you know. It's like, you know, you realize here that all you have to do to get sober and stay sober is to do what the winners are doing. But first you have to single those winners out. And you'll find them at meetings and you'll find them setting up chairs and you'll find them making coffee. And you'll find them doing a lot of the mundane things that other folks just don't like to do. There are some folks who just want to make cameo appearances in AA. You know, like, I'm here, you know. And you see those folks, and they know everything about AA. And you can always hear that from them as they pick up another 90-day token. You know, it's like, oh, this time it's going to be different. And it will be different because they may only stay 60 days or 40 days or whatever. But the reality is they're not involved, you know. And if folks don't want to come to AA, my experience is nothing will stop them. You know, that's just the way it is. If they don't want to come, nothing will stop them. And I like the big book because in the chapter Working with Others, it has some very defined guidelines for being a winner so that other people want to be around you. It has three nevers in that chapter. And one is you never criticize another alcoholic. I'm not making this stuff up. It's right there on the first page in Working with Others. You never criticize another alcoholic. And you never force yourself on them. You never force yourself on them. And number three is you never speak down to them as though you're on some moral or spiritual hilltop. Never. Those are three important nevers. The reason people want what we have is because we're not shoving it down their throat. You know, what we're finding out here in Alcoholics Anonymous is that we all swim in the same water and our job is not to pollute the water. You know, it gets to be real simple. And it doesn't make any difference what other people, how they refer to you or how they call you. I was living in New York when Malcolm X was on the rise there, and I remember him making a statement one time, which I thought, wow, that's a profound statement. And he said, it's not about what people call you, it's what you answer to. You know? And I said to my sponsor one time, I said, how do you know when you're really sober? He said, oh, you'll know. And I said, that's not a great answer. And I used to pester him, how do I know? And he said, okay, I'm going to tell you the secret. So I, ooh, you know, move into the inner circle. Next thing you know, I'll sit at the big table when I go to his house, you know? And those little kitty chairs in the alcove, you know? But he said, it's real simple. He said, someday you'll be minding your own business, doing something, and you'll hear someone say, hey, asshole. And you won't even look up. Because you'll know they couldn't possibly be talking to you, you know? But you say that around most alcoholics, and you know, it looks like deer during hunting season. You know, like they're up and about. You know? And I thought, he's absolutely right. It's just becoming comfortable enough with yourself that, you know, you don't have to know. And don't try to explain AA to anybody else because you can. It's too bizarre. People don't understand it, particularly if, in quotes, they're normal. You know? I can remember 2 years back I was flying very much like today. We had low clouds in San Diego and it reminded me of the story. We were almost delayed coming out. And 2 years ago, I flew from San Diego to Texas, and then I was going on to a convention in Amarillo. And I was sitting next to a guy on the plane, and I was going to miss my connection in Texas because we had taken off so late. And he turned to me and he said, "Are you going to make your connection?" And I said, "No, I'm not." He said, "Where are you going?" I said, "Amarillo." He said, "Oh." He said, "Business?" I said, "A convention." He said, "What were you going to do there?" I said, "I was going to speak." He said, "How many people are there?" I said, "Oh, about 4,000 or 5,000. He said, "What will they do?" I said, "Anyone in the room can give the talk." We flew just a little bit further. You know, and you could feel the pull of that hook. And he said, "Excuse me." "Yes." He says, "I have a question." "What is it?" He said, "Why would they fly you from San Diego to Amarillo to give a talk if there's already 5,000 people there who can give the same talk?" "I don't know, that's just the way they do it." Well, when he landed, I invited him for pizza, but he never showed up. You know? And that's the way it is. You can't explain this to someone. I mean, people come in and they're looking for the power structure here, which is funny. You know, newcomers is like, "Well, how do I get to move up?" "Oh, you make coffee." He who makes coffee owns the group. You know? "By making coffee, I'll stay sober." That's the beginning. You got to clean up too, you know. Half measures avail us nothing, you know. Like, you got to do the whole job. And you know, the simplicity of it is such that it goes right by most people. They just have trouble grabbing it. Because we're around people today who make up new words for everything. You know, and that's why we have like, thank God, they're in our area, they're seriously diminishing. But there used to be like programs for, you know, sex without partners and, you know, just all kinds of stuff. You know? Oh, you guys didn't hear those in Iowa? I never went, but I heard their meetings sometimes get out of hand. But that's I don't go. You know. But you see people running around doing all kinds of stuff, and you say, you know, why don't you just sit down, you know, and do what we do, and see if you don't get the results that we got in your own way. And it's real hard because folks just don't want to do that. They want to create something new instead of doing something that works. It's like, I want to be innovative. I, the steps are good, but there must be something beyond that. There is. There's, you know, spiritual growth. And if you hang out and do those steps, you'll eventually experience that. And then you won't have to ask so many questions and you won't have to run so many other places because you'll realize the answer you're looking for was right here all the time. And if you be alcoholic like the rest of us, this is the best place for you to hang out. And it's the best place for you to hang out because, to put it very simply, this is where the winners are. This is the winner's circle. If you want to go sit in the grandstand, you're entitled to it. You're entitled to do anything you want. Whoever wrote the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, collectively or individually, wrote a book that had absolutely no confrontation in it. Because it always tells you, if you want to try another way, go and try it. If you think you can drink, go and try it. You know, the door is always open here. There's a lot of must, I understand that, but there's also a lot of, hey, you know, go try it your way. You think you have a better idea? You think you can drink like normal people? Step next door. Give it a shot. You may be a winner. And when you get your license back, you can come back. But that's what it is here. The good news here is that Alcoholics Anonymous works, and it works very effectively. And the bad news is, if it is bad news, is it takes the rest of your life. It's just a lifelong process. It's kind of like the guy who woke up and he had just had prostate surgery. And the doctor was looking over him and he said, "Doctor, how did I do? How did I do?" He said, "Well, I have some good news and some bad news." He said, "What's the good news?" He said, "We were able to save your penis." He said, "What's the bad news?" "It's under your pillow." what you find out is sometimes the good news is the bad news. And the bad news is the good news. You know, it's really hard to tell one from the other. And the main thing for me was that when I got here, I hung out with people who didn't ask me what I was thinking about. They didn't ask me how I was feeling. They didn't ask me a lot of rhetorical questions that I couldn't answer. They just simply said, we go to meetings and we set up chairs and we make coffee and we do this and we do that. And if you want what we have, then you'll come with us and you'll do these things. And it was so simple because even a guy like me who was unscarred by education had no trouble figuring that out. I watched people do actions. And then I began to do them just the way they did. I set the chairs up just the way they set the chairs up. I made the coffee just the way they told me. And before you know it, I was part of something. Instead of looking in from the outside, I was on the inside being a part of it. And slowly, over a period of time, I realized days, weeks, months, and years were going by. And not only was I not drinking, but I was becoming more and more comfortable with who I was. And I wasn't at war with people, and I wasn't being arrested, and I wasn't finding things before people lost them. And I wasn't living with my mom anymore in a senior citizen place. And a family that had left and moved out of state, you know, we got back together for a while. You know, things began to happen that were of a very positive nature. And they happened simply by me doing the things that were suggested here. And not only were they suggested, but I got to see people demonstrate what they were telling me. They weren't just saying, do this, and then they go do something else. They would just grab me by the hand and take me along with them, and I get a chance to be part of doing it with them. Not only being told to do it, but watching them do the same thing. And life got real easy for me. And it got real easy in the sense that today, I hear people say things like, and I've said this myself, but I don't say it anymore. People say, well, I don't want to go back to drinking because it was so bad. And I have said that in the past. But that's not the reason I don't want to go back to drinking today. I don't want to go back to drinking today because this is the very best life I've ever had. Period. This is the very best. I get up in the morning and I have a life that's worth living. I have a life that I'm a part of. I'm involved with a lot of other folks and I go to meetings and I do all these basic things. As a result of being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a son who chose to die in my house. I had a son that I got to hold in my arms and go through the process of saying goodbye. I had a son that if I was drinking wouldn't want to be around me and wouldn't be around me. And chances I may not even be there myself. I may be locked up somewhere. But because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to be there. I got to hold his mom. I got to hold my other son. I got to know that life is okay. Regardless of how it's going, it's okay. Even if I don't understand it. Now I have a granddaughter who's starting school, and she's just a terrific person because she was a born terrorist. I love her. You know? And she came and visited me for a while, and I sent her home, and my son said, Dad, you couldn't possibly have told her what you did. Because I told her, honey, you can do anything in my house as long as it doesn't bring the police or the fire company. And you know, I think that's what grandchildren are for. It's to get back at your kids for all the things they did to you over the years. You know? It's like a chance saying, go play with daddy now, you know. And have fun. And she and I relate because, you know, I take her out on a bike and she rides a bike and she doesn't like to fall off. And I understand that feeling, you know. I thought I was going to have training wheels on my bike till I was 40. And the reality is that you get to be part of life with a whole bunch of people. There are always people who are going through things. And you get a chance to be there for them. And it's not about giving them a whole lot of pat answers. And it's not about giving them some quick cure. And it's not about telling them how they should feel. It's just about being there. Sometimes I just go and have a cup of coffee and sit in somebody's living room. And just let them know you're there. And I have a lot of things in my... I'm a gadget kind of guy. I have snow cones, you know, these things that you shake them and it snows, paperweights, and then you put them down and it goes back to normal. I have guys that don't even talk to me anymore. They just open my front door, reach in, grab it off the table, shake it, put it down, and leave. You know? And it's kind of like a reminder that, hey, if you leave it alone, it will go right back the way it was. You know, there's a certain way things are meant to be. And my problem was I didn't want them to be that way. That was where I was always at trouble with life. I thought life should be the way I wanted it to be, and it just never was. And it doesn't have to be today. And the other thing was, is I tried to hold on to things, and all the pain that I ever experienced was trying to make permanent things that were only temporary. You know, I didn't know how to let go of things. I didn't know that, hey, it's about letting things pass by. You know, I went on a Zen retreat. I love retreats, and I'm off the wall most of the time. But there's, there's some advantages to being unscarred by education, not knowing, and being crazy. And that is, people just don't ask you a lot of heavy questions, you know. It's not like people stop me in the hallway and say, hey, some big question. It's more like, excuse me, you know where the men's room is? It's like, yeah. So I get involved in those kind of things. But on this retreat, this guy did an illustration for us. And what he said was that if you would ask most people which hand was their strongest hand, they have an idea of which, each person says it's my right hand, it's my left hand. And what he had us do as a group, which was great, was put it together and push as hard as we could. And what you find out is neither hand is stronger. The right hand can't overcome the left hand, and the left hand can't overcome the right hand, regardless of what you think. And the reason for that is the power all comes from one place. The power comes from one place. And if you want to change, and if you want to live a different life, then take the pressure off your hands and entertain prayer and meditation. And through prayer and meditation, you'll be seeking a power greater than yourself. And then you don't have to worry about which hand is the strongest. And life gets real, real simple. There's a fellow who's passed away now who used to come into my home, and Harish, and he was from India. And whenever he came into my home, he would sit down and he would say, Namaste, Ken. And when he left, he would say, Namaste, Ken. And Namaste, loosely translated, means the God in me recognizes the God in you. And if the God in me is looking for the God in you, and the God in you is looking for the God in me, we can disagree surface-wise on anything, but we won't hurt one another. And that's all about growing spiritually in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all about not drinking. You know, not drinking is the beginning of the deal. You know, there are people who say with a great deal of authority, and they're absolutely correct, that if this was just about stopping drinking, then spin drives would turn out people who are okay, because you're stopped for some period of time. But this is more than that. This is about growing spiritually. This is about becoming comfortable with yourself. And this is about recognizing that, life is going to go on. It's going to go on regardless of what I think should happen with it. And someday it won't go on. And the paradox here is that the only thing death can take away from you are the things you haven't given away. The only thing you can lose is what you haven't given away. And the only thing that stays here is what you have given away. All these paradoxes. And I can see why newcomers have some trouble when they first come in, because everything is exactly the opposite of what it should be. You know, they'll say things like, how do I win here? Oh, it's easy, you surrender. Oh, how do I keep this? Oh, it's simple, you give it away. And if you're here long enough and lucky, you'll get to make amends to everybody you hate. Oh yeah, I'm so glad I came. This was the best move I could have made. And it's about taking care of one another and realizing we're only on loan here. And I look around this room tonight, and I just know that next year, if you have this thing at the exact same time, not everybody in this room who's here tonight will be here. There'll be some people who can't make it for whatever reason. There are some people who just decide financially it doesn't work. There are some people who'll be out drinking. There'll be some people who have people in their family sick, or they'll be sick. So it's so very important to engage in maximizing each instance in your life and turning the ordinary into extraordinary, and realizing that's what is extraordinary. It's about doing the ordinary things, but doing them totally in the moment, being ever aware of what's going on around you. You know, the old timers used to say things like, don't look back in fear and don't look ahead in anger. Look around in awareness. And as you look around in awareness, you get to inhale all of life. I never knew there was so much going on. I mean, as I drank, my world got smaller and smaller until eventually it was a few select bars and people I wouldn't choose to hang out with under normal circumstances, and pushing my loved ones away and spending time with people I didn't want to spend time with, and not spending time with people I wanted to spend time with. And it was about when I got here, my oldest boy, who is now going to be 34, was 9 years old. And it's about watching him go on with life. And it was watching him stay in that hospice room and watching him being so close to his brother and recognizing that I, as a single parent, got a chance to raise both those kids. And I got a chance to go through their life. And I got a chance to go through it in sobriety. And I could have missed the whole deal. I could have been a six-pack away from the whole deal. I was at a meeting in a convention in San Diego a while back, and I was introduced to a fellow who, the last time I saw him, I had a gun in his face. And fortunately, that gun didn't go off. And it hit me at that time that there was a reality there that there used to be a guy who used to say this is about seconds and inches. And a move either way would have terminated our whole life. It would have been real different. Instead, I got a chance to live life. You know, I'm not volunteering, but if I don't make it home this weekend, or my life should end in the next few days or weeks or months or years, nobody knows me anything. I've had a good ride. I've had a good run. I've had a chance to enjoy life maximum-wise. I've got a chance to laugh and be laughed at and be part of and do all the things that I always wanted to do and just never knew how to do them. So if you're here, please stay. Be real good to one another, and remember, we're only on loan. I love you. Thank you for letting me share. God bless you. Namaste.